Evening, Marcus. Sorry I'm late. Bow ties. Always did give me trouble.
Welcome to the Indiana Jones Universe, the podcast that explores the incredible adventures of the world's greatest globe-trotting archaeologist, Indiana Jones. Each episode is a casual and somewhat humorous opinionated conversation with a slightly sophisticated analytical study of the expanded universe content from the Indiana Jones franchise. You can expect to find discussions about the adventures of young Indiana Jones, the further adventures of Indiana Jones comic books, the Staff of Kings and Emperor's Tomb video games, the Indiana Jones novels, the original soundtracks, and so much more.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 83 of the Indiana Jones Universe podcast. Today we're going to review issue number 9 of The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. This is a comic book series we've been going over, and today's episode is about part 1 of The Gold Goddess. This one came out in September of 1983 and is titled Zomix Raiders, and it's kind of a play on, you know, the title Raiders of the Lost Ark, which we see featured in the corner on the title page. And this comic is one of my favorites, I think. It has incredible line work. I think the attention to detail here is just through the roof. And like in the artistry in this one compared to some of the others in this series is, I think, leagues better. But yeah, let's just get right into talking about today's comic.
Yeah, we are finally here doing another comic. Great to be back. And boy, oh boy, I have been looking forward to this one for a long time. I completely agree with everything you just said there, Elijah. The Gold Goddess, one of my favorite comics, and dare I say, one of the best expanded universe adventures of all time. I think this is a terrific two-part series. Really looking forward to getting into this one. As you said there with the title, Zomix Raiders, this is really the first attempt at creating a direct sequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I think with this comic is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I really, really love the way that they took some of those elements of Raiders and adapted it into an entirely new adventure. And I think you see a lot of really great elements here that sort of bring back that spirit. But as we've been talking about, add a little bit something new. And, you know, when we talk about the expanded universe and sort of why this podcast exists, why are we doing this? The idea that we're trying to sort of promote all of these sort of expanded universe adventures, you know, we talk about Star Wars and the expanded universe that has so much critical acclaim and is so much more widely known among so many fans. But with Indiana Jones, the expanded universe never got that same attention. And, you know, for people who might be, you know, watching Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and as the credits roll say, man, you know, I really wish there were more adventures out there. You know, what else exists, you know, while I'm waiting for Indy 5? And when we talk about the comics, young Indiana Jones, all these video games, I think this is one of those prime examples of why the expanded universe is so great. And I'm looking forward to talking about this one. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and this one sort of picks up right off of where, you know, we left Indy with Raiders. I mean, we have the same MacGuffin here as, you know, the starting sequence in the movie. And the fertility idol is really central to the whole story. It's not just, like, the first part of it. And we pick up right here with Indy and Sala. Very familiar. Indy's going down a rope. Sala's sort of letting him down. And they come to this sort of a temple, and they find these guys who have taken the idol. And he's still after it. I'm really kind of curious. What do you think? How did Belloc lose possession of the idol?
Yeah, and that is, I think, really one of the fun questions here that was sort of left unanswered in Raiders. And when you talk about Raiders as a movie entirely, right, there's that final scene in the warehouse with the Ark, right? And top men are working on it right now. You know, that whole sequence there is one of I think the reasons Raiders is such a fantastic film, because Spielberg understood that not every movie needs a satisfactory ending. And the same thing happened with The Idol. Obviously, Belloc dies at the end of the film, but whatever happened to The Idol? How did he lose possession of it? And that's exactly what's explored in this comic. You know, we have so many familiar characters returning here, and the entire plot of this comic story is centered around Indy trying to retrieve the Chachapoyan Idol for a second time. And what's really, really great about this, too, is that, you know, at the beginning here, you know, we see that shot, which is one of my favorites right at the opening here, that sort of little banner, Stan Lee Presents. And you'll notice that under it is the idol shimmering with a beam of light. I really love that first page because, as we see in this opening shot, this is such a direct continuation of Raiders. And seeing the idol almost idolized, no pun intended, like that, you know, kind of gets you back in the spirit. And picking up right where we left off in Raiders, you might remember that scene when Indy mentions that he needs $2,000 to fly to Marrakesh because he thinks that's where Belloc will sell the idol to the highest bidder. And so now that's where they are. And Indy and Sala reunite in Marrakesh to try to chase after the idol and after, I guess, these grave robbers who we think are, you know, sort of these unknown villains at the beginning. Of course, we learn their identities a little bit later. But, you know, this is in 1936, and we suspect this is just weeks after the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I think is really, really fun. And the sketch of that city right there, I just wanted to mention, and its architecture is beautiful. Like, again, you talked about some of the illustrations in this one. Really reminds me of, like, Casablanca and that whole style. Really, really kind of fun to see that in the beginning here.
Yeah, I really like the locations in this two-part series as well. We have Marrakesh, we have Brazil and South America, we get New York. I think it's a really great shakeup of, you know, Indy and all kinds of different environments, which is really cool to see. And I think we'll see more of that, you know, in Dial of Destiny, which I'm looking forward to. One of the first things that really struck me as I got into this comic was just the line work and the coloring. It feels very fleshed out in comparison to some of the others. This one seems to have a lot more craftsmanship to it. Like, for instance, the details on a lot of the idols and stuff in the backgrounds. It's just like they didn't have to go to so much, work to make it this way. But they obviously had the passion for what they were doing, and it really shows.
Oh, definitely. And like what I love about this comic, too, is like you can tell they just had fun with this. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of times now, especially with these big, massive franchises where there's so many expectations for fans to live up to the original or do something entirely different, what I appreciate about this comic is they just had fun with it. I don't think there was any sort of, like, really moment where you felt them stretching the boundary too much or trying to recreate Raiders in some way. They just had fun with it, and I appreciate that, especially in the way that, you know, this is right out of Raiders of the Lost Ark, that Well of the Soul scene, right? Sala holding that rope for Indy to climb up to, you know, in that, you know, sort of temple or tomb space. Directly inspired by that, obviously. But you talk about the art, I totally agree with you. All around, I think there's terrific illustrations in this entire comic, some of my favorites. But I have to say, the character design, only for Sala and Marion, to me, was very questionable. I wasn't a huge fan of it. The color choices were a little strange to me in terms of both of their attire. And also just the facial, you know, sort of characteristics did not remind me of John Rhys-Davies and Karen Allen at all, which, you know, I know is difficult to recreate because obviously this isn't a film, you know, it's not live action, but there have been previous moments in the comics when they've done a really great job. I'm not sure if they, you know, sort of changed illustrators or anything, but I was disappointed that I felt like the quality kind of came down a little bit in sort of the realistic sort of interpretations of those characters.
Yeah, I think that's just a thing that happens with these comics is you have different artists working on them. And I think that's a problem we've seen with multiple different issues where, you know, the character doesn't look like the actor who's portraying the character. And some are better than others, of course. I think this one really exceeds expectations in terms of, like, the detail, but maybe not in terms of the characters' faces. But one of the interesting things about this comic, which is, I think, a little less typical of Indiana Jones, is that there isn't really a supernatural element here, is there?
No, not really. And that is one of the things that was big in the comics, like you just mentioned, was they really wanted to incorporate those supernatural elements. And this is maybe one of the reasons why I like this comic so much, because for me, I've always been interested in the historical and archaeological aspect of it. As much as I think the supernatural is fun to incorporate and such a big staple, that's never been like the sole reason why I've enjoyed Indiana Jones over the years. And maybe that's why I sort of lean towards this comic. But I agree with you. I didn't feel like it tainted the story in any way or brought down its value. I still think it was very, very strong. And there's so many great moments here where it just, that feeling of Indy comes back. I mean, right at the beginning here, you talked about that scene here with Indy climbing down the rope. And right as he jumps down, he notices, you know, a dead corpse lying on the floor. And he's like, someone might have been here before, right? He tells Sala to keep a sharp eye out. And we see these two, again, sort of at the beginning, what look to be grave robbers. Of course, they become the two main villains later. And, you know, we notice that, you know, obviously Indy mutters to himself that they're stealing the idol. And, you know, he's crossed half the world to find it, right? He's got to get it this time, right? And there's that great close-up of Indy's face, which kind of mimics, you know, like Spielberg's cinematic style of, like, the hero shot. They do that a lot in this comic, which is really fun, you know, in moments when he's either, like, really sort of, you know, stunned or shocked, or he's determined to get something. They show that intense close-up, and it almost is funny to me a little bit, because you really, I think, get that sense of what Indy's feeling in that moment. So I like that they include those sort of mini scenes there.
Yeah, and speaking of close-ups, there's another one that comes a little bit after that one, where Indy's like, it's mine, and he's in the shadow and everything. He really looks kind of more like, you know, a typical low-down treasure hunter than an archaeologist in that frame. Which I guess is like another instance of, you know, where does Indy float on the scale of, you know, archaeological ethics.
Exactly.
Which is a really fun thing to think about. And when he tosses the idol up, you get another reference to Raiders, which is at this time the only film that's come out, where Sala is singing, oh, a British tar is a, you know.
Yeah.
he really is into his music, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And so great that you brought both of those points up. I want to just backtrack a little bit to talking about that moment where Indy says, it's mine. I thought that was a really critical turning point where you see how some of his own ambition and lust for power, you know, causes him to consider retaining the idol for himself, right? You talked about the ethics of it. What makes Indy different than grave robbers or people like Belloc who works for Nazi Germany, right? What makes that him different? It's for the science of it, the educational aspect of it. It belongs in a museum, right? Obviously, nowadays we're seeing that that's not even entirely ethical, right? And a lot of artifacts are being repurposed back to, you know, their original countries and cultures. But at this time, of course, you know, putting it in the museum was important to Indy, and that was sort of the big takeaway here. And when he becomes in control of something he seeks, we notice in that shot, we talk about like the Spielberg hero shot, he almost becomes obscured by its sheer presence, right? And his objectives are a little bit blindsided there. So he contemplates that decision with a long, hard look at this, you know, shiny gold idol in his hands, right? And there's that, you know, terrific sort of, you know, thought bubble that gives the audience, you know, that sense of why Indy is different. He's like, it's mine, but I have to bring it to the museum, right? So that was really fun as well. And, you know, one thing before that too, you talk about sort of priceless antiques and things like that. You know, I found it funny how when Indy saw the grave robbers escaping with the idol, you know, he tensely grabs his whip and, you know, runs after them. And we see this, you know, sort of environment here with a lot of these large statues. And I love how he whips it and pulls it down onto them. Of course, there's that hilarious, you know, moment with sort of the sound effects and all capitalized letters that, you know, really adds to the comedic element of the comic. But I found it funny how he was, like, not reluctant to be breaking such a priceless antiquity. You know, it was so interesting. And then, of course, a hilarious moment there, too, when you see a little sort of thought bubble from the enemies and they, you know, are sort of like reacting in pain, like, oh, you know, after this huge statue has fallen onto them. So, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting. But, you know, he retrieves the idol at last, you know, finally. And then, yeah, you talked about that moment right there. Absolutely hilarious that he just throws the idol up too. Can we talk about that? You know, he throws it up to him. Sala somehow catches it barely from, you know, the ground below. And yeah, he begins to sing that same chant from Raiders when Indy and Marion are boarding Katanga's ship. So awesome details right there.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, with the idol, I guess the statue that he whips down, it kind of reminds me of, you know, when he's in the tomb and they're trying to escape, you know, with Marion. And so he knocks the pillar down and, you know, breaks through the wall. So I guess it's a similar situation to that. Indy actually breaks through a door to get into another room. And part of what I think makes this comic unique is its really creative use of panels. It's not just this page, it's throughout the whole comic book we see like the different situations influence the way the page is laid out. So Indy, you know, he kicks through the door and he breaks right into the next panel. It's a really, you know, a really creative and clever way of structuring the way the comic flows.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, the panels in this one, I thought, yes, were absolutely very creative. I noticed the same thing. There's a couple moments in there, you know, right after that moment, which, by the way, I may have missed something, but, you know, Sala obviously is standing on top and holds the rope down for Indy, so we would imagine Indy is underground, or maybe they're in a temple. I couldn't really get the full sort of scope of it. But he breaks down the door, which leads to, like, this paved road, and there's a car chasing after him. That shocked me for a second, because I thought they were underground. Maybe I missed something, but I thought that was kind of funny.
I think what it really is, as you can see from, like, the overhead shot with the car chasing him, he was actually in some sort of warehouse, and they had gone that in from the roof. And then that's why, you know, Sala pulls him back up, and they're running from rooftop to rooftop as they're being pursued. And speaking of that overhead shot, by the way, I really like how this comic is willing to do all kinds of different angles. It feels entirely cinematic. And in some ways, like, you know, to get that overhead shot, you'd need like a drone or some sort of crazy boomstick or a helicopter. Like, it does some things that even they couldn't really, you know, afford to do back in the day.
Right. And I totally agree with what you're saying about, you know, this idea of these panels and how creatively, you know, they're used throughout the comic. I think it's really, really clever. And I noticed the same thing. And, you know, right after, of course, there's that moment where, you know, Indy somehow, you know, escapes. And of course, the grave robbers have also escaped and survived, you know, this huge statue being forced on top of them. You know, he quickly evades this gunfire as, like you said, he charges towards that wooden door, gets out onto the paved road, and there's a car chasing after him. Right. And I love that shot, by the way, of Indy kicking down the door like a total badass, you know? I mean, it's hilarious. His fedora is flying off his head, you know, and he's getting chased by this fast getaway car. And right there in that moment, like you said, it's illustrated in two separate ways, right? There's the overhead shot of Indy turning that sharp corner. And then right when he gets to the dead end, there's a narrow shot of Indy reaching that sort of dead end with his silhouette against a large cement wall. Like, those are some of the moments where it feels more like, you know, things we've seen before in sort of the actual film itself that are incorporated into the comic to give it that cinematic look. And one thing that caught my eye here as well, this is one of the few instances when Indy uses his bullwhip as a ladder to climb up structures. We don't often see that in the films, but this was a big deal in a lot of the video games, like Staff of Kings and Emperor's Tomb use this idea a lot, which I think is really cool to kind of see it come in the comic years before. But I like the creative use of the whip without just sort of defeating enemies, but in environments as well.
You know, it's really funny that you should mention that thing about the hat, because we actually don't see the hat throughout the rest of the comic. It's gone after that moment. It's really strange.
Yeah, that is a great point. I was going to mention the exact same thing. I actually noticed that like sort of halfway through when I was rereading this, and I said, wait a second, what happened to the hat? And then you start like sort of tracking it, and you realize, yeah, he doesn't ever retrieve his hat. He loses it for good. And then in the transition segment in part two, which obviously we won't spoil it, we'll talk about that next week. But, you know, he actually somehow has a new hat. Like, I don't know if he just has like a Mr. Rogers closet of sweaters and just has a million fedoras back there. But it's always the fedora that he got in Last Crusade. And yeah, I'm not sure if that was just sort of like they weren't even thinking about it or a continuity error. But yeah, he loses his fedora, never gets it back. And it's not like sort of, you know, maybe he just grabbed it. No, it's like a full comic later, he suddenly has it again. So that was a little bit funny, but slightly disappointing that, you know, something happened to the original fedora and we don't know where he got it back from. But maybe Marcus pulled a few strings or something.
You know, I think perhaps, you know, this is, you know, we only have Raiders as a film at this time. We don't have, you know, Last Crusade giving the hat the significance it earned at that point.
That is true.
Maybe it's just like, at this time, it's just a hat for the people who wrote the comic and he can get a new one, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Just like he has, you know, a million of those shirts probably too. Of course, you know, it goes under so much trauma in Temple of Doom when he loses half a sleeve and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, yeah, maybe he just has a closet full of this attire.
I mean, I know we at least know he has the gray fedora. So anyway. And then they have this rooftop chase, which I think Indy has a sort of uncanny ability to avoid bullets. He's like a magnet that's opposing the bullets, you know? They just never hit him. He's like, oh, I see guys shooting at me. I won't take out my gun and shoot back at them. We'll just run on the roofs. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a really sort of fun moment, too, where this sort of like chase on the rooftops, you know? And during this entire chase sequence, of course, we have Sala, who's carrying the idol in his bare hands as they're jumping across, you know, all these rooftops. And he says he forgot to release the rope, which is how the grave robbers, of course, got back onto the roof of this temple and are now chasing them. And, you know, it's this great sort of classic rooftop chase scene. We've seen that, you know, in other elements in indie before. Of course, Adventures in the Secret Service comes to mind. And, you know, I love these sort of hilarious antics, like you were saying, you know, with sort of, you know, indie dodging all of these bullets, of them just like flying off the rooftops. I mean, they sort of seem invincible as they're doing it. It's really funny the way it's sort of articulated in the comic of them just like, you know, these huge like gusts of winds and them seeing like another one and them just jumping over these huge roofs. I think it's hilarious, you know, and there's that great shot of the city marketplace down below as Indy and Sala jump across another roof, right? And the gunmen continue chasing them until they no longer have any more roofs to jump to, which I thought was a great moment. And of course, their truck happens to be waiting,
of course,
right below it. So they decide to just jump down into it.
I have to say, this sort of, the sequence almost feels like a little video game mission, you know, jumping over roofs with the item while people shoot from behind. And there's this quote in here, it's, "Let's hope we both get a chance to grow older," which I feel like is especially emotional after seeing how, you know, Sala and Indy are reunited in Dial of Destiny much older. And it seems like Sala might be the one who pulls him back into the saddle. But that's a whole different discussion. Anyway, talk about karma, right? They fall through the truck and they land in hay, which is apparently for the camels. I mean, karma sounds a lot more like plot armor to me. But anyway, I love Sala's enthusiasm because I feel like, as I was saying, it really sort of plays into who he is throughout the series, including him sort of pulling Indy back into the saddle, you know?
Right. And I love as well, too, there's this moment when Sala remarks right as they get into the truck, "I love this life, Indy. I love it." And he begins to sing again, the same chant that we were talking about earlier. And yeah, I mean, Sala's enthusiasm and, you know, his just adventurous spirit is so fun, both in this comic, both in Last Crusade, in Raiders. And Marcus never really sort of has the same part of that, right? He's always back at the museum, sitting in his cushy chair, right? And not to say that he doesn't, you know, go on any adventures, or he doesn't, you know, care for Indy as much, but it's a different dynamic. And so to bring Sala back in this one is really fun. And of course, whenever Indy gets a hold of a truck, he goes to town and puts the pedal to the metal, right? And we see that right here, this huge thing of exhaust and dust that comes out as Indy, you know, takes control of the truck. And notice a very important sort of moment here. When notice Indy's hand is on top of the idol as they drive away, kind of signifying how proud he is of this victory, right? Sala remarks something similar. So they finally have the idol in their possession. They begin driving away, and in a very prologue-style fashion, you think everything's over, right? You know, we have this moment of, you know, them jumping into the truck at last, which there's a great, you know, sort of narrow panel going back to this whole thing we've been talking about that really does convey the scale and height of this fall from the top of the roof into the truck. And then finally, the grave robbers reveal their faces as they watch Indy and Sala escape, right? And we have these small quotes, you know, "The war is not over, the death of Indiana Jones." And the ferocity of these villains is really revealed, you know, with that close up on their eyes. And interestingly, you know, the motives and identities are still unknown to us at this time, which kind of adds a little bit of suspense and intrigue. And, you know, we'll talk about this a lot in the next episode once we sort of reveal who these characters are. But what I really like is I don't feel like we conform to the very stereotypical villains that we've often seen in these comics. These guys are much more developed, I think, and it makes for, I think, a much more fun and interesting comic. But, of course, Indy and Sala don't have the idol to their full possession just yet.
Yeah, so we enter in New York, which is, you know, Manhattan specifically, and we pick up with Marion and we have Marcus as well. And they're kind of waiting, and Indy's a no-show, which is, I feel like that's quite in character for him. And I guess one of the main complaints I've had with this comic is, you know, Marion, I mean, she looks like she has red hair. It's just not a very convincing depiction of her, in my opinion. But I wasn't very enthralled with her in The Search for Abner. but I guess I need to manage my expectations a little. But one of the things I really thought was fun is, you know, first of all, how they introduce Andy. It's like all the reporters rush the elevator, and it feels like, you know, when he's trying to hide in his office and all the students are trying to get in, you know, it's a very similar atmosphere in the way he's treated as a character. He's almost a celebrity to these guys, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it was really interesting to see Indy sort of almost in that James Bond persona. And we use that quote today for that exact reason. I thought that was a really, really great quote for Indy to say. He comes out looking very tall, you know, finely dressed, and he kind of seems like he's won it all, right? He really is sort of that like idealistic figure when we talk about sort of filmmaking and in this comic and the way he's shot, you know, his a full body shot. Like, he does sort of feel like that James Bond kind of character. He's kind of got it all. He has that sly remark that he gives to Marcus. But back to your point about Marion, I agree. And, you know, we've talked about this plenty of times over. And again, we've seen so many comics where Marion looks very realistic, but the red hair, I was not a fan of that. Looks totally different from the movies and previous editions of the comics. And, you know, I thought that was a little bit disappointing, you know, but, you know, kind of it is what it is. I guess our expectations, of course, are a little bit too strong probably here. But, you know, you talked about this sort of event, you know, with Marcus Brody being the curator, obviously, and also Marion attending this fundraising event for the museum. And we see, again, Marion's feisty personality kind of shine through, right? Really conveyed through the dialogue. And again, you know, very on brand for Indy to always be late to something or showing up at the last second. And there's even this moment where Marcus sort of sympathizes with Marion's frustration a little bit, right? When she is kind of actually really disappointed that Indy's not here. And of course, all the reporters rush over to the elevator. Marcus thinks they're leaving, right? And then that is the anxiously sort of awaiting Indy's big reveal there. As, you know, there's that hilarious look on Marcus's face as he realizes that Indy is behind the elevator, right? But one thing I was curious about was, you know, why is the background and also many other moments in not this comic, but also part two, which we'll get to, why is there so much use of the color red? I don't know why this really stood out to me that much, but you'll notice that that's kind of a featured color. There was a shot at the very beginning when Indy is fighting one of the grave robbers, and they're both highlighted in red. There's also this red background here with the photos being taken. It just seemed like there was a lot of red in this comic, not for any specific reason, but I was curious if that symbolized something or what. I don't know. It just stood out to me as being really bright and like sort of unusual that there was so much red as sort of a featured color in this comic.
Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of throwing my theories out there, but maybe it was like, you know, the ink they had, or maybe it was sort of to maintain your attention since red is a very engaging color. And it does, it does show up in a lot of the backgrounds or when characters are far away, they're just highlighted in red so we see them. So that might be the main purpose of it. But one of the things I thought was really funny is how they set up a replica of the temple to display the idol. I think that's like a very engaging kind of exhibit. Like, I would go to see that, you know?
Right, and that sort of goes with sort of this entire theme here where Marcus is really ecstatic that Indy finally retrieved the idol. You know, he takes it to the archive room, all excited that Indy's finally found it. And again, this is sort of one of those things where we sort of had a moment and a plot point in Raiders that was sort of left unresolved. And so for Marcus and Indy to finally share this moment, you notice they both have their hands on the idol as Indy passes it to him. That's a really great shot as well. And of course, this leads to where things sort of change. Marcus gets trapped inside as the door slams shut. And the enemies are finally revealed as the Jovitos tribesmen from Raiders, that opening prologue. Their leader is Zomek, of course. This is titled Zomek's Raiders. And he has a fierce demeanor and also physique. I mean, this guy looks like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He's huge. And we sort of see here how what we were talking about earlier with ethics, right? They worship the idol and would do anything to restore it to its rightful guardian. And in some regards, the Jovitos tribesmen, you know, restoring and reclaiming this artifact is sort of sacred to their culture, right? And what separates this is, you know, in Raiders, Indy's intent of taking the idol out of its resting place and bringing it to a museum was to prevent other people, such as Belloc, from gaining control over it. But here, Belloc's kind of out of the picture, and you'll notice that Indy is really not reluctant at all to give it back to them. And that's sort of where sort of their villainous sort of qualities kind of come out when, you know, Indy sort of resists with them. So I thought that was kind of interesting that it sort of is interesting sort of change here in terms of why Indy might want the idol this time.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about it, they're kind of justified in trying to retake what was taken from them. You could totally write the comic from their perspective and it would still work. But I think one of the fun things about this comic is its consistency of sort of the characters and the way they talk to each other. Like, we see, for instance, the way Indy and Marion interact. You know, they there's the whole scuffle. There's shots being fired through the door and the reporters are, you know, about to get hit. And so Indy rushes out to go crawl on the side of the building. And we know where this is leading, but he crawls out there. Marion's like, be careful, Indy. And he's like, I'm always careful. it's totally right out of the movies.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's one of the fun parts of the comic for me as well, is just the dialogue and the banter between Indy and Marion, because that was so established in Raiders. And obviously, she doesn't really come back in a prominent role until Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which of course hadn't come out at this time yet. So for that to really be an important integral part of the comics, I think was really well done and adds to sort of the fun sort of comic element of these comics as well. And, you know, we see obviously Marion also, you know, for as much as she sort of gives Indy a hard time about his archaeological interests, you know, she really does, I think, have strong feelings for him and follows him in this pursuit of Zomek and the idol, right? After he escapes the display room by, you know, firing gunshots through the door and all the newspaper, you know, photographers go crazy. And of course, Indy climbs out the window and onto the ledge of this huge skyscraper in order to reach the back entrance of the display room to save Marcus. And these are amazing illustrations. You know, going back to what you were talking about at the very beginning, you know, the fact that they show the depth and height of these skyscrapers, Indy's in Manhattan, New York, right? So this is a really, really different environment. And we see, of course, him, you know, barely missing the arrow that's fired at him, right? So it's like a really sort of intense action moment that I thought was really well illustrated.
One of the reasons why Marion and Indy are such a great fit for each other is because she's just as bold as he is. Like, she follows him out on the ledge and she saves his life when he almost tumbles to his death there. And I think one of the interesting things about, you know, Indy's character here is he sort of assumes that the Jovitos aren't very smart. And so he tries to bait them with the coat and then he crawls out over there. And they sort of wait until he's in a position where he can't go anywhere else. And then they trap him. And he seems to always be falling into their traps. So really, I guess they're pretty clever to sort of bait him out and then, you know, take advantage of his, I guess, his vulnerable position.
Yeah, I mean, he really has learned his lesson from Raiders. I mean, I don't know what happened there, but he's encountered the Jovitos tribesmen before. And there's also this really funny moment, you know, that really, I think, goes back to why the comics on their own are like so from the 1980s. Like, there's this moment when he takes off his dinner jacket and he's like, so far, it's only been good for increasing my dry cleaning bills. You know, it's just, you would never find that in any of the movies. Yeah, you'd never find that in any of the movies nowadays, which I thought was just hilarious. And of course, he uses it, you know, around the corner. I can just imagine him like flailing it around the corner. like it's a dog trying to get a treat, you know, like you know, him using that as sort of the way that for the warriors to sort of come and encounter that resistance here. And, you know, Indy hits him with a suit jacket as he falls over the edge, which I also thought was funny. Like, how much power does he have with his one hand in his suit jacket? But again, just like Raiders, you know, these elements are coming back, right? We see the Jovitos use those darts, which that was a really big focal point at the beginning of the prologue when they find it stuck to that tree. So to have that come back is really great. And then there's a really great storyboard here, layout, that visibly depicts Indy's movements as he falls off the ledge, right? I love how you can see his glasses falling in all three of the shots too, which is really, really great.
To the point that I was making earlier, just the attention to detail in these comics, you know, the hat, you know, comes off at the beginning and we don't see it again in this one. And like the way the glasses are tracked all the way down, there's a certain craftsmanship to the way it was done and sort of a very thoughtful quality to the whole comic here. And it's very dynamic in its motions and the angles we see. Obviously, the people who made this comic are masters of their craft. And they had a lot of fun with it too, especially like with this guy who comes up and he's going to stomp Indy's hands off of the ledge. And you know we're reaching the end of the comic because For some reason, and I don't understand why they always insist on it, every comic seems to end with Indy hanging off the edge of the cliff, or maybe even in the fall from the cliff. It's really kind of funny.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a literal cliffhanger, right? And we've seen this in all the other comics before, so you totally saw it coming, right? As one of the warriors stomps on Indy's hand, right? And his fingers barely fall off the ledge. And there's another great shot of, you know, him just barely falling as you see sort of this, you know, shot going down to the street level view of the vertical skyscraper. So it's really, really fantastic, I think, how they end this sort of, you know, cliffhanger moment here to kind of get us excited for the next comic and really what's going to happen to Indy. Will he survive? What's going to happen next? How does he get the idol back? So it just adds that sort of classic suspense that you're looking for. But all told, what do we think of this one? Part one of The Gold Goddess.
I think it's an excellent addition. So far at this point, it's my favorite that I've read, especially, you know, the line work and the sense of vertigo you get from staring down the skyscrapers. It's really incredible, especially with, like, you know, the turns where Indy thinks he's smarter than the Jovitos and then they outwit him and stuff like that. It's really thought out, and it feels more cinematic than just a typical comic book, you would say.
I totally agree, and that's why I like it, I think, a lot. It feels so cinematic, and the attention to detail, the thought that went behind it, you know, how can we take something that fans appreciate and that they like and turn it into a new adventure, right? And this is the idea that, of course, the idol, right, was that one moment where, you know, we don't really know what happens. It is left open-ended. It's not a satisfactory ending. And of course, if you're not somebody who reads the comics and you only watch the movies, you'll never know. But if you want more of an adventure, we're going to give it to you. And this is a perfect medium to do that. So I really appreciate that this was a comic because I think it's such a perfect medium for it. It's a great side story. The elements and characters that they bring back from Raiders, you can tell they were so heavily influenced by it, but they also made it a little bit more fun, made it a little bit more in the style of the comics. They didn't sacrifice any of that. And, you know, I think it's a really, really fantastic comic. One of my favorites, like I said, I think part two tops it even more. And actually kind of a fun fact, by the way, kind of going off of the success of this, of course, most people might be familiar with the Indiana Jones role-playing game that came out in the 1980s, which was made by TSR, the same company that made Dungeons & Dragons when that sort of took off. They actually, in 1985, made a bonus campaign titled The Golden Goddess, which was a direct reference of this. I think they were so pleased with how well it tied into Raiders of the Lost Ark that they actually put it into their role-playing game. So
wow.
Kind of, again, another instance of them really liking what Stan Lee and his team did with this one.
Yeah, I think it could be interesting to even look at that game on its own as maybe a future episode. But I have to agree, I love the comic. It's a great tie-in to Raiders. I mean, the parallels are all throughout the comic. We've got Marion, you know, she saves Indy. You've got Sala with the rope going down into the, you know, the warehouse. You've got car chases. You've got Indy, you know, with exerting certain tasks that are almost impossible. I mean, it's all Indiana Jones, and this is, I think, what people come for when they want Indiana Jones in theaters or in comics. So this is, I think, a thorough representation of his character in the expanded universe, and I love to see it. So I'm really looking forward to the next comic because so far these have been my favorites that we've gone over.
Yeah, and you know, I think for people that were looking for sort of a sequel to Raiders, I think this does an adequate job. And if you were also looking for another moment where Sala sings a lot of his chants from Raiders, you certainly get that as well, which is great that he incorporates that. That's like one of those moments, I think, where you're like, wow, you know, I really appreciate that detail. It's almost like in My First Adventure, the sound editors on that first episode had a really great detail of when they're actually digging for the Tomb of Ka, that same chant that is used when they're looking for the Well of the Souls in Raiders is used. Like, those little things where fans can say, wow, that's really cool that you put that in there. You know, it's just, it's purely for the fun of it. So that's what I appreciate about this comic, and looking forward to getting to part two, which definitely takes this on a whole nother level. But thanks so much for joining us, guys. If this is your first time listening and you enjoyed today's episode, consider subscribing to our podcast. You can find us on all major podcast platforms. Leave a review. Tell your friends, tell your family about this show, what you like about it. Of course, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about us, you can visit our website at www.theindianajonesuniverse.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us directly from there, or you can follow us on Twitter at The Indie Universe. But thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Thanks again to Victor for making today's episode possible. Once again, I'm Elijah.
And I'm Will.
And until next time, so long, Dr. Jones.